Comic Timing are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcasts.com. Welcome to Episode 7 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan for the average comic book fan. Join in as David Price and myself, Ian Levesey, discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here on Comic Timing. This week, Braxton Harrison joins us for a Mocha Festival wrap-up and a stirring trades versus floppies debate. We also mention Braxton's magical cheesy Brax snacks at least once. Cheesy Brax snacks. Here now, the host of the show, Ian Levesey.
Hey folks, I'm Ian Levesey, and welcome to another exciting edition of Comic Timing. This is Comic Timing Episode 7, and joining us today, of course, the mainstay, the man of 1,000 podcasts. He is everywhere and nowhere. He is David Price.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. Also joining us as well, a newcomer to the show and a buddy of ours over at the Comic Geek Speak forums and our forums over at Comic Timing, both of which in the same place over at ComicGeekSpeak.com. It is Braxton Harrison. Braxton, what's going on?
Hey, what's happening?
Not much, man, not much. Now, give us a bit of your background on comics before we get things growing here, because I realize we've had guests on, and we haven't actually explained how they got into comics in the first place, so...
My background, I've got a master's degree in comic reading, I guess.
No, it's a great alma mater.
I just realized the first comic I ever read that I can remember is Indiana Jones 2 from Marvel. You guys remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was the issue that has the they're getting lowered in the vat of gold by these Aztec Indians, and that's the first comic, and I just realized that like a couple of days ago. So, but that's the first comic, and ever since then, it's just been.
Now I have to ask.
A little Marvel, more DC.
Okay, what attracted you to the Indy Jones comic? Was it the fact that it was from a movie that you were familiar with? Was it something about the cover?
I was really young, so I'm sure it was just the fact that my mom got it for me because, you know, okay. Indiana Jones was the big thing, and I loved Indiana Jones, you know, so.
You're not alone.
Yeah, that was the reason I got that one.
Well, you know, back in the day, it was all about, you know, like, ooh, my mom let me get this. Wow, that's actually pretty cool. And then from there, it spirals.
Yeah, I mean, you don't get to pick and choose when you're that young. It's just whatever you can get.
Oh, hell yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics were some of the first things that I got, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so there you go. Anyway, let's get things rolling here. And we'll start things off, actually, before we get into our main topic of the show, which we'll announce now what it's going to be, because you got to have some reason to listen. And that, obviously, is going to be a conversation on... trades versus quote-unquote, because I hate this term and we'll get into that later, floppies.
Floppies.
Now, I don't think comic books when I think floppies, but we'll get into that later. basically, individual issues versus picking it up in the trade, our opinions on that. But before we get things rolling, I went to a comic festival. And I say comic festival because that's more what it is as opposed to a comic convention. Because when you think comic conventions, you think, you know, multiple rooms, like about like maybe like... thousands of people there and all that. This is a more localized thing. This is known as the Mocha Festival here in New York. And I got to meet a couple of guys there. Peter from the comic from Comic Geek Speak was there, Peter Rios, and Indie Spinnerack actually recorded live there. So if you check out Indie Spinnerack, you'll actually hear a couple of live episodes they recorded there and met a couple other people there as well. But what I love most about it is that it's all indie comics. Not many mainstream books. Every now and then you'll see a guy who maybe did one issue of a Marvel book or a DC book, and they'll have that on their table. But it's almost all Vertigo and Ape and all the other crazy independent names out there. So many independent names, it's hard to remember them all off the top of your head because they're everywhere. Independent comics, so many different companies, and so many of them don't see the light of day. But when you go to a festival like the Mocha Festival, you see them all. That's what I love about it, really.
Well, is it like if someone just has one comic or one graphic novel that they created and they publish it, does that constitute one publishing company, or is that they have to be under another company? You have to have so many different comics to be in
well,
Mocha.
You know, they're are all ranges, actually. There are webcomics there. There are, you know, people who, like you said, have just done really one comic book and they haven't really, you know, gotten much else going. Self-published books that are more along the lines of what you just said. Yeah. And then you've got ones that actually work for or created their own companies. And then there's people who just, you know, put something together and say, yeah, this is the name of my company. Haven't you heard of it? Why haven't you heard of it? Oh, I just created it 5 minutes ago, you know? And yeah. That's the way that things roll. But I got to meet a lot of my favorite webcomic guys there, and actually Doug Bratton that I interviewed for... Excuse me while I close that door. There we go. Doug Bratton, who I interviewed for Geek Speak, I got to meet over there and actually picked up his second book, got to meet his wife, who's a very, very nice woman, and he's a very, very nice man as well. If you ever get to meet him, he will have plenty of things to talk about. Very, very nice guy, to say the least, and he's over at PopCultureComics.com. I got to meet the creator of Questionable Content, which is another one of my favorite webcomics, and bought yet another one of his shirts because every one of them makes me crack the hell up, and it seems as soon as I see a new shirt, I get a new shirt. So questionablecontent.net over there, and Diesel Sweeties, which is over at Klango.org, and a whole bunch of other webcomics there. So wide range of comic books, and that's what I love about it also, because when there's a wide range of comics, there's something for everybody, which is, you know, great, because young kids, older people, everybody gets something to read over at Mocha.
What was the superhero content like? I would figure that superhero comics tend to get kiboshed in, among the independent circles.
Yeah, you know, actually, there weren't too many of the quote-unquote superhero books there. I mean, there were a couple of, you know, superhero books that, you know, were actually just independent superhero books. But when you think about it, you're more along the lines of a DMZ and, you know, yeah, things along those lines. NYC Mech. And one of my favorites that actually is becoming my favorite as I read more and more of it, because I got the trade collection, which is actually all of it, Teenagers from Mars, which is just hilarious and at the same time sort of creepy, because it's about these teenagers that I don't even know exactly what it's about yet, but it's about this guy who worked in a comic book department at quote-unquote Malmart. Not Walmart, obviously, because that's, yeah,
Walmart.
And one woman complains, and immediately the manager goes up to him and says, take out all the comics, we don't have a comic book section anymore, we just lost a customer over this. So instead of doing that, he quits his job and immediately punches the lights out of his manager.
Okay.
For wanting to get rid of the comic book section?
For wanting to get rid of the comic book section, because this dude's that much of a comic book fan, and that was just, wow. You know, how many people have worked at a job before and you just want to punch the lights out of the dude that you're working for?
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And this guy says, I quit, and then punch. And he actually, the thing is, the guy kind of fights back, and he ends up royally bloodied and, ew. But
okay.
A whole bunch of other stuff going on here. Like, there's a zombie subplot, and there's, like, this weird magic dust. And it's the sort of thing where, like, if you don't read it, it's really hard to explain out loud. But...
yeah, is it a genre of all sci-fi? Because it's Teenagers from Mars, so I take it they're going to go to Mars.
Put it this way,
nobody
from Mars yet, but I think it's just a really catchy title. It's from Gigantic Graphic Novels. That's the guys who put it out. And the creators are Rick Spears and Rob G. And Rob G has done some other stuff as well. He's done a couple stuff with Brian Wood, actually. And really, really good stuff so far. I'd highly recommend that. One of the other ones that I got to meet is the woman behind The Devil's Panties.
Yes, she was in Atlanta recently, actually. She was at Criminal Records, which is a really cool place to buy your comics if you live in Hot Atlanta. And she was doing a signing. I didn't get to go up there, but I think I posted it. You know, everybody go and see her. But
Jenny Breeden is her name. And I actually picked up Con Artists, which is one of the other books that she's done. And Con Artists, get ready for this. It's all about these people that she met who dress up like pirates on a regular basis and live the pirate lifestyle.
Wasn't that in that movie, the Dodgeball movie? Wasn't there like a guy that was a pirate in that movie?
Yeah. Yes.
And, like, the best thing about it is that she met these people at a convention and just thought that, you know, that they were cosplaying. But then afterwards she realized, wait a minute, no, these dudes are actually pirates.
I could get with that, David, couldn't you?
Sure.
Yarr. You have to practice your, you know, gin slinging and, you know, get a peg leg and get a parrot.
Yeah, you have to get an amputate get amputated, but that's all
right. Well, you know, honestly, now I'm in pain just thinking about that. But, no, I mean, she was really, really nice, and she has a lot of stories. And actually, we're trying to get her on the show, and that was one of the great things about this con, too. Everybody is approachable. And as long as you've got a story, as long as you've got an interest, you can talk to these people. I got to talk to Evan Dorkin for a bit, who I'm sure a lot of people out there already know from his previous work on the Bill and Ted comics and Dork comics and
Milk and Cheese,
Welcome to Eltingville, which was the Adult Swim pilot, and a couple other things that he's done. And again, we're trying to work on a lot of interviews here that I've got a lot of people that I'm going to be getting back to. Christine Norrie, who is the artist for Hopeless Savages, which is sort of like a tame version of the Osbournes, that's the best way to put it. And I've loved her work. I've been reading it for a while. I actually found her through Chinnacust and Major. Because, actually, now it's just Chinnacust, okay. Actually, because she dropped the major.
Yes.
But Chinnacust, right. She did artwork in Hopeless Savages, the flashback scenes. And from there, I found out about, you know, basically I just found out that she had done it in there, picked up Hopeless Savages and loved it, loved Christine Norrie's artwork, and now I just love anything Hopeless Savages, and I'll just pick it up right off the bat. So, a lot of fun stuff there.
I do have a question about the yep. layout. Was there any rhyme or reason? Like, as you're going, were these exhibitors, were these professionals set up at tables, like at booths, like at a convention?
Yeah, they were set up at tables, and it's sort of like one giant artist alley. That's the way to put
okay.
it.
Was there a rhyme or reason if, like, from you went from one table or from one artist to the next, if like, you know, this is designed or this is aimed for, this is a kid-friendly comic, and then the next you have, like, you know, dead zombies eating children, you know, was there...
I guess you could sort of put that that way, because a lot of the webcomics were in the same room, so I guess you could
okay.
put it that way, but I think it was more along the lines of the A room when you first walk in was more the more familiar comics, like the more people that, you know, actually, you know, I guess maybe paid more to get the bigger booths and... folks that have been around for a longer time, stuff like Love and Rockets, that, you know, actually,
okay.
you know, people that would pick up right off the bat. More of the independent comic book writers and artists were in the B room, and then the C room were most of the web comics.
That was in the bathroom, right?
No. Actually, that was where the bathrooms were, but no, they weren't actually in the bathrooms. Funny story, though, when you mentioned bathrooms, 3 years ago, my first Mocha Festival that I went to, I was there with a couple friends, and there was a sign that was pointing in the wrong direction for the bathrooms, and we didn't realize this, and we thought that the bathrooms were down in the basement, because that's where it was pointing. It was pointing towards a staircase, and we were like, okay, maybe there's stuff down here. We basically went through the catacombs of the Puck building. And found out every single thing about what makes this place tick. We found the boiler room. We found all these stuff downstairs that I'm sure we were not supposed to find, all because one sign was pointing in the wrong direction, and we were looking for the goddamn bathrooms.
Oh,
it's probably some mass murderer who tried to mess you up a little bit and send you on the wrong path.
Yeah, I was saying the entire time, like, they're really lucky that we're not terrorists, because, I mean, we've just got access to the boiler room and, like, everything else, and all because of one misplaced sign, you know? I mean, just think of what can happen in this world, but... I mean, in all seriousness, though, this is one of my favorite independent things to go to, just because of how approachable everybody is, and I can't say that enough, because everybody's friendly.
Well, let me ask you this, was, I mean, you know, you hear other people just... I've never been to a con. I'm going to Heroes Con, and that'll be the first one I'm going to go. I've gone to the smaller ones around Atlanta, but and Dragon
yeah, right.
Con, but that's not really a con. But they always talk about, you know, the starving artist, how you kind of have to keep your head down, because if someone starts describing a comic to you and they want you to buy it, did you kind of get that vibe?
Oh, boy. See, yeah, that's the thing, Braxton. I spent way too much money, because once any comic artist or writer gave me their
yeah.
puppy dog eyes, I was like, okay.
I would be like you.
Well, also, it was also sort of along the lines of, I, you know, I went there to try and support the people that I already knew, you know, and people that I want to try
yeah.
and get interviews with, and basically anybody that I wanted to get an interview with, I bought their stuff, because I realized that there was there was something seriously wrong about, you know, talking to this person for the longest time and then walking away without buying something, you know, but mind
right.
you, all their
yeah.
stuff looked interesting. So I definitely wanted to pick it up. Like, I definitely wanted to pick up, you know, stuff by the actually one of the ones that I wanted to talk about. And as I grab for it here, because all my stuff is, like, sitting behind me right now. Let's see if I can actually find it without actually turning around. Here we go. Yeah. Convention Confessional. And this is by the guys over at Skatoon Productions. And what it is basically they're literally going through their convention experiences and also a couple of dream sequences. Like, there's one dream sequence where they go to punch out Jim Mahfood. I'm not exactly why they would want to do that, but that's one of the dream sequences. So I'm not sure whether that's, you know, warranted or not. And I'm not saying anything about Jim Mahfood, but that's one of the things that's in it. But they go to a whole bunch of different comic conventions inside of the thing. And, like, it goes from, like, the absurd to the real and back again and a whole bunch of funny stuff. But I got to talking to them first, and I saw the comics. And after talking to Rob Riley, the guy who actually writes Convention Confessional, I'm like, I gotta pick this book up. And that's what it is. You know, conversation can lead to purchase. If these guys sound good and they sound like they have a really cool idea, I'll go and pick it up.
Oh, plus you really don't wanna, if an interview came to fruition, it'd be nice to actually have something to talk about as far as their work.
That's the exact reason why I picked up the DMZ trade paperback, because I got to meet Brian Wood. And I was looking to buy DMZ anyway, because I've heard great things. Toby goes on and on and on about DMZ. And Brian Wood in general, and I was like, okay, you know what? I finally need to pick this up, because I've been hearing wonderful things about DMZ from everybody. Why am I not reading this book? And the trade paperback just came out. He had that at his table, and I went to pick that up, and I'm really glad I did, and I'm going to hopefully start reading that as soon as I'm done with Teenagers from Mars and Death Note, which are the two things that I'm reading right now. But once I'm done with those, DMZ's next on my plate, because I want to know what the hype is about.
Yeah, I mean, between DMZ and local and supermarket and everything else that I've heard from it, I have to get on that Brian Wood bandwagon.
Exactly,
himself.
Yeah, because and he also seemed like, you know, he seemed like a very casual guy, you know, very, very relaxed, that's the best way to put it. Like, I went up to him and I'm like, yeah, you know, I've heard a lot of great things about you. He's like, oh, thank you.
You know,
like,
cool.
Like, not very...
Oh, this old thing?
Yeah. He's the anti-John Byrne.
And here I am, like, trying to stay away from bashing anybody on the show, and there you go with the John Byrne.
That's why you have
me. I know, man. Well, I haven't made any comments about that guy who I talk about every single goddamn show yet, so... And I will try my best not even to mention his name or any letters close to his name during the show.
Very nice.
Thanks very
good
much.
Man.
But yeah,
good
John
man.
Byrne, he's an eccentric man, but... A whole bunch of other stuff that I found, I actually picked up, okay, and this is, cover your kitty's ears, by the way, when I say this, but there's, let's see if I can find it in my pile here, I can't find it right off the bat, but I believe the exact name of it was Peeny Man.
Peeny?
Peeny Man.
As in,
oh. Peeny, as in,
P-I-N-I?
As in, the organ.
Yeah,
okay. And it's basically a whole bunch of one-shot, one-panel strips of this man named Peeny Man.
What does he look like, Ian? Is there a reason we call him Peeny Man?
He has a very Mr. Fantastic-like penile region. That's the best way to put it. And there's even one strip that introduces Vagina Girl.
Where do I sign up?
Oh, jeez. They made a fan in Braxton.
Oh, man. See, you know, and it's not porn, okay? It's certainly not porn. It's absurd.
Just risque,
it's
comedy?
It's absurd. That's the best way to put it. It's absolutely absurd. It's hilarious. And the guy sold me on the pitch alone to the point where I think he might very well have a quote from me on the back of his book that he's putting out. I was like,
wow.
Well, this is certainly the most interesting concept I've seen all day.
Most interesting concept I've heard all day.
Yeah.
And he was like, can I use that? I'm like, yeah, as long as you say who I am. Okay. And there you go from that. But no, and I also got a couple guys who, I mean, you know, from talking to them, you know, telling them about comic timing and telling them about the other things that I do, they're like, oh, well, that sounds really interesting. We'd have to check that out. And, well, hey, that's another great thing about these conventions, because you meet people and you might very well have new fans on your hands, which is really, really fun. And all in all, a very pleasant experience. I mean, that's literally, there's not much I can say about it. The only my only problem with it, because it's a small room, fanboy funk will become a problem. Okay? Oh. And it's mostly in, when you first walk in, there's one room, the first room, the A room, does not have air conditioners. Okay, that's a problem. Because B and C have air conditioners and actually feel like it's more open space. B is the most open area. Like, you're not cramped in. It's not like the aisles at New York Comic Con. You know, it's very open. A is a bit more cramped, and C is cramped but doable. Let's put it that way. A is the most difficult part to get through. And especially when you get hit by that blast of...
fanboy funk. That's one thing I'm really not...
Looking forward to
the
There's an anime
funk.
Convention that actually puts in the goodie bag deodorant.
Deodorant, sweet.
Yeah, which, you know, right away you're thinking, okay, that's probably the best idea anybody's ever had, and why the hell don't they do that for, you know, all conventions, you know? Like, have a sign posted, if you smell, you can't get in, you know, or something along those lines, you know?
See, with all this talk about product placement in Marvel Comics and whatnot, I'm surprised like Menin or Gillette or Speedstick hasn't just decided that would be awesome. Because you know Logan's going to need it. You know the Thing and Hulk.
Yeah, you'd have them as your advertisers.
Absolutely.
I need to go grab my Gillette. Yeah, great. That's really what we want to see. Advertisements for deodorant inside of comics. And do you
Well, then at least the fanboys would get the hint.
Would they really, or would they just keep reading the book?
I want to be like Wolverine. I want to smell like Wolverine. You want them to smell like
smell
Wolverine
like
now?
Wolverine.
They already
we know
do.
Wolverine uses Old Spice. Come on. I mean, there's...
No, he uses High Karate.
Think?
I would think. I don't know. Old Spice... You
is that
might
an
be
Aquavel
right.
For me?
I would think that's just true. Because of how old Wolverine is, he has to use Old Spice.
He probably uses sandalwood, you know, the herb.
That's has probably a little bit of that in his pocket. Patchouli. Yeah, exactly. Just freshening him up after all of his encounters. Why are we talking about this?
You started.
Oh,
we
digress. God. But I digress. Back to the thing. But no, that's one of the problems. Another problem is the noise level, because of how, you know, cramped it can be at times, is very loud. I blew out my voice. Well, okay, mind you, I went to Dave and Buster's afterwards, so that also added to me blowing out my voice, but by the end of the day, I had no voice whatsoever. I was gone, period. And I could actually feel myself just having casual conversation with the friends I went with, you know, with Peter, with the other guys that I was talking to along the way.
That your voice was leaving? Exactly. Oh, that's when you start talking to girls, because you have the rasp.
Hey,
you know?
What's going on?
You go to a bar and
I had to pick
whiskey.
Up chicks by Braxton. That's good.
See, Braxton, this is why you're on the show. You know, you give us so many tips. Exactly.
Tidbits.
That's right.
Your southern ideals, man. There you go. That's the way it works.
Now I have to ask. Did this? I'm trying to the way it sounds, because obviously it's at Mocha, which
well, actually
the
no,
M stands
it's
for
not
museum.
At Mocha. It's
oh,
not
did Mocha,
Mocha
present
presented it?
It
is not at Mocha. It's actually at a building known as the Puck Building, which is in Manhattan. It's over by Broadway Lafayette. For those of you who know Manhattan, it's over by around where like the it's a 6 train stop nearby, and there's a couple other trains nearby, and that's around where it is. But it's not at the actual Mocha Museum, and that's the main difference. If it was at the museum, it would be even more cramped, because that is not a big museum.
Okay. Okay, so then it felt like an indie or small
basically,
press
and that's basically what it is. I mean, the festival part almost could be convention if you wanted to, because it's actually gets bigger every year.
Is this okay? So then there goes my next question. So this wasn't the first year.
No, I've been there the past 3 years, and before that they were doing it. I think they actually did it at a different place before then, but every year it's been at the Puck Building. I've been there, so. It's honestly, and there's a reason why I keep coming back, because it's the friendliness of the creators, it's the overall atmosphere, it's bumping into people that I didn't expect to bump into, because that happens to me all the time. I'll be going to one of these things, and I'll be like I'll see a friend from like 4 years ago that I haven't seen since then that's into comics, and I'll be like, dude, what the hell are you doing here? You know? I actually, the past 2 years, I ran into a guy who actually ran the tutoring center at my college that I used to volunteer at. The past 2 years, I've run into him, and I'm like, hi, I don't work there anymore, but hi. And, you know, I mean, you can run into anybody, and it's a small world, especially in the comic world.
All the people you would want to run into. Oh, that's exactly. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is.
And
yeah.
Also, creator-wise, I mean, Jim Mahfood wasn't there this year, but he was there the past 2 years. And also Jackson Publick, the guy behind Venture Brothers, he was there the past 2 years. Again, he wasn't there this year because Venture Brothers is just starting up. So, obviously, he's got stuff to do, so that's why he wasn't around. But so many different types of comics, too. Because, again, I said that before, because anybody will find something that they like at this convention. Even if you're not really into comics, even if you're like the girlfriend who just got dragged along, you'll find something that you're awing over, and you'll find it, and you'll love it, and you'll hug it, and you'll bring it home.
That's your call.
Exactly.
That's
hopefully great. It won't be another guy.
I certainly hope so, because that's not what this convention's about. There are other conventions for that, yeah. But not comic conventions. That much I can certainly say.
Right.
And it's also nice that they've embraced podcasting, because again, like I said, Indie Spinner Rack were the official podcast of Mocha. And it's awesome actually being able to walk by and see that they're recording on the spot. And that's just like, wow. So these guys are on the go. They know what technology is, in. And I actually ended up hanging out with, I for the life of me, I can't remember which podcast she does, but hopefully I'll remember as time goes on. But I ended up hanging out with a girl and a couple other buddies of mine who actually, she does 2 podcasts on her own. And I didn't know this when I met her, because I was introduced to her through another friend, but she's from the Pennsylvania area, and she's like, oh yeah, I do these 2 podcasts. And I'm like, wow, I do 2 podcasts too. Wow, bonding moment. And we talked, we went on and on about podcasts for the next like 20 minutes, and everybody else is like, uh-huh, yeah, okay, sure, whatever you say. So how about that other topic that we care more about, But honestly, I go to big conventions, I go to small conventions, and there's a reason why I go to each. And New York Comic Con was great for the more mainstream stuff, for the DC, for the Marvel, for the Vertigo, for the that sort of stuff, for the independents that don't really shine so much in the spotlight. This is what that's for. And excellent, excellent, excellent job this year by Mocha. Excellent. Right on. So. Any other comments that you'd like to ask me about said Mocha before we move on?
I've been to... I guess I'm going to have to go to Mocha itself, because I was just trying to find out if it's anything like the Museum of Cartoon Art, the one that I went to in Ride, New York, where...
Yeah, that's another question, because I heard you say that, so there's other Museum of Cartoon Arts in other cities?
There's a Museum of Cartoon Art, which I want to say it might have been Mort Walker, the creator of Beetle Bailey, but there was a comic strip creator in the 60s, maybe 70s, my time frame screwed up, where it was, I think it might have been in New York, in the city originally, but it was in Rye, New York for a while, in Westchester County. And it was basically, it was a house, and other artists in comic books or comic strips would go to the museum. I mean, you'd walk into the restroom, and it was like, since it was a house, it was one bathroom, and there were doodles and sketches and autographs all along the wall in the bathroom from other artists, and it was just so cool. But And you would just walk around the house, and things would be on display. But when they left Rye and moved down to Florida, I think it was Boca Raton, it was much more of a contemporary museum-style atmosphere where they... you had everything on the walls, but even in the middle of the floors, you had other, comic strips and just original artwork and exhibits and a section for kids and a section on comic books. And it really is a fun place to go to. And just, they don't have, I mean, you're not going to like learn a ton about the medium or the hobby, but you will get a really nice feel of, why are they printing these comic strips so small in the newspapers? These things are great, and I'm real glad to be here, and actually I enjoy reading these on a daily basis, and I mean, it hits it home a little bit more, but I'm curious to know if
that's
the museum
odd
itself...
that they should put them in the bathroom like that. You sure it wasn't just phone numbers, David, in there.
No, it definitely wasn't phone numbers.
David, tell you what, man. All right, if you want to plan a day or something along those lines where you want to head into the city and check out Mocha with me, dude, by all means, because I've been really wanting to go to the actual Mocha Museum for a long time now. And if you're ever free, you know, on a weekend or something like that, and you want to hang out a bit in the city, dude, I'm up for it. So, and actually, there is a FAQ on Mocha's website that tells you all about the museum, basically it whether it's recognized by the state of the city of New York. And yes, it is, actually, as my dog Very starts cool. barking in the background, because it would not be a show without that at least
he's
once.
He's got your back.
It's located on 494 Broadway on the fourth floor. So that says right off the bat that it's a floor of a bigger building between Houston and Prince Streets in the heart of Manhattan's famed Soho Art District. By there you can get there by subway, and it moved into this space on March 2004. So it's been there a couple of years now, and there's actually an exhibition going on now. The latest exhibition, now that the Todd McFarlane has ended, is actually She Draws Comics, 100 Years of America's Women Cartoonists. And that's from May 20th to November 6th of this year. And this is their little blurb on it. Celebrated a century of the greatest female practitioners of comic and cartoon art that America has ever seen, from the Nell Brinkley girl to the turn of the century to the wartime adventures of Miss Fury and Brenda Starr to today's cutting-edge manga and graphic novels, with over 50 artists participating in over 100 artworks shown. This is the largest woman cartoonist show in history, curated by noted scholar and artist Trina Robbins, who will appear in person at the opening, and that was on May 20th. So there you have it. And that's something I'm really interested in right off the bat, because I'd like to actually see just how many women artists I recognize there, because I know a couple offhand, but it'd be great to see these ones that I've never really heard of before that, you know, were in the business long before I was around. So it's definitely worth checking out. And like I said, there is a FAQ on their website. If you go to mocany.org, mocany.org, and go to their FAQ, you can find out all about the Mocha Museum, and they have a special section for the festival as well, so you can find out exactly what that's like, even though obviously there won't be another one until next year. It's a whole lot of fun, and again, I highly recommend checking out the museum and the festival itself if you ever have the time.
Cool.
Definitely. Coolness.
All right, right on. And from there, let's say we move on to our main topic, shall we? All right.
One.
And the topic for today's show, as I mentioned on the top of the show, and I'll say this yet again just for us to shudder at the mention of the word, trades versus floppies. Now, first of all, I want to know, who created the term floppies for one issues? That's what I'm wondering.
Someone that needs to be hit in the head.
Somebody who is in favor of trades.
Probably.
Yeah, you'd think.
Yeah, how hard is it to say individual issues? You know, they gotta get.
Well, quite hard. I mean,
that is kind of hard.
You could see singles. You could say. I mean,
trades versus monthlies.
See, I like
trades versus monthlies. Okay, that's it. It's officially called trade versus monthlies from this point. Stop using the word floppies, or we'll hurt you. Okay, not really. We're not gonna hurt you. Maybe we'll hurt you emotionally. Like we'll say if you do that again, you're gonna make us sad. You don't want to make us sad.
That would hurt. That would be bad.
You know I'm kidding, folks. I love you all.
Well, Braxton, as the guest, do you have a preference to trades over
honestly,
monthly single issues?
Honestly, I do have a newly established preference, and that is I tend to go toward the trade simply because of the argument that the story is complete, and that's the biggest argument right there, is that everything's complete, it's got an ending to it, it's got a beginning, middle, and end.
Okay. You know? Now, what about these stories that are split up into multiple trades, though? I mean, like, you might have something that, let's say, like, for example, The Ultimates. The Ultimates didn't really come out in 12 issues right off the bat. They did later do, like, The Ultimates hardcover and all that, but if I remember correctly, they only put out 6 issues at a time at first. And The Ultimates...
The trades were 6 issues?
I believe so. And obviously they're mostly in 12-issue arcs. Again, I could be wrong about this, but that does happen sometimes, where you'll see something that is a larger arc than the 6 issues.
Well, I mean, as long as it's a story that, you know, is contained in the first trade, that would cause you to seek out the second trade. Yeah, I do. I mean, I get like 6 or 7 monthlies every month. You know, it's not like I just go get trades. But my big thing is it's just more of an enjoyable read. What really sold me on it was Mignola had already completed his Hellboy run. He was like 4 or 5 trades completed before I even, you know, discovered Hellboy. And I read them over a period of like 3 or 4 days, wow, all of them. And now I'm getting VPRD monthly as well as Makoma, or, you know, the current Hellboys that he's got out monthly. And I have to go back to last month's comic to get, you know, reacclimated with the story, and then, you know, take off with the new comic that just came out. And, you know, the thing is, I mean, that's just how, that's the name of the game. It's tradition that comics come out every month, you know, it's part of it. But I just really enjoy it, the full meal feeling that you get from reading a complete trade with the whole story wrapped up. And
they look nice on your shelf.
Yeah. Oh, and that's another thing. They look, especially Mignola's trades, they're so beautiful.
I do have the first Hellboy trade, and that was my first time I actually read a Hellboy book.
Well, you need to get the other ones, David, because
I will.
Everything's connected, and it's, yeah, it's
Raxton
really
will
a good story.
Go to your house, okay? He will track you down, and he will.
I will dress as Hellboy.
Oh my God! Wow.
Me and Ron
Perlman.
Really?
Crap. Now, see, who would look better as Hellboy, though? You or Ron Perlman?
Ron Perlman, right. I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I can honestly say, trades for me, they're more for catching up than they are for actually waiting until something's done and then picking up the issues. Because I'll give you an example here. Ex Machina. Ex Machina. A great book. Brian K. Vaughan puts it out monthly, you know, in independent issues. But I picked up the first trade of Ex Machina, and I was hooked. But when the first trade came out, they were already about 4 issues into the next trade. And I'm like, okay, I'll wait until the next trade comes out. The next trade comes out. By the time that trade comes out, it's about a year later. So I'm about 6 issues behind again. I'm like, well, crap. Because they didn't come out too regularly. I think they came out like once every couple of months at first. But now they're more regular. But I think there were like maybe 8 issues out at that point. Well, something along those lines. But the point remains, when Volume 3 came out, I'm like, okay, enough is enough. I'm picking up all the issues that I'm missing, and I'm picking this up monthly because I cannot wait any longer.
And I'm victim to the same thing, and I, you know, and that's why I get monthlies. But I'm resentful of having to do that, you know. But
so
I have
the
to,
case, you know.
I don't look at trades as a way of catching up. I tend to look at trades as a way for me to read stories that I missed. Looking at what's in my little cubby right now, I have, because I wasn't reading Spidey when Straczynski got on it, I do have the first 3 trades of his
You'll like about
his
2
run.
Of those, but do go on.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I have the first Walking Dead, I have the first Marvel Team-Up. Now, Marvel Team-Up, since I wasn't reading it when that came out, I will get the second trade, but there are some stories that I would like to read in the trade format, and that one of them would be DC The New Frontier. I love those 2 trades, the Volume 1 and Volume
2. Yeah.
I think that really does that, and I'm looking forward to the Absolute Edition.
When Amazon put that up with the wrong price, I jumped on
alone.
That opportunity, because they put it up, it was supposed to be like, what, like $80 at first or something along those lines, and they put it up for like $25.
Yeah, it's like $75.
And I was like, okay, buying. And then they changed. Then they said, "I'm sorry, we put up the wrong price. You can't buy it." I'm like, "Oh,
yeah, we screwed it." But I mean, this book deserves to be in a collected edition. I wouldn't want to read that in those 6 monthly issues.
Well, here's another one, Dave. What about V for Vendetta? I mean, I didn't get those comics when they came out.
But see, that's when I'm saying that a trade does serve a purpose. You know, if you weren't reading comics in the 80s, if you weren't reading them even earlier, in the early 80s when the story was first released in the UK, or you weren't reading DC Comics when the Vertigo label first started and it was one of the first books that Vertigo put out, and it was a reprint. You know, I think I have issues 2 and 3 of that run, but I never read the entire story. Something like
that.
I don't think I would
enjoy that story if I had to read it piecemeal.
You know, I would actually agree with that. I really would, because...
But a lot of Alan Moore's work is like that, though. You really can't read it on a
Watchmen.
It just needs that
Watchmen.
Chunk. Right, exactly.
Watchmen I picked up. And again, also, I think I'm more of a past guy when it comes to trades, also because I'm looking at my shelf right now, and I've got Watchmen, I've got Avengers Forever about 3 years after it came out was when I actually got it. I've got X-Men Inferno. I've got JLA, JSA, Virtue and Vice, which is the one exception. I got that out immediately after it came out. But again, we'll talk about graphic novels in this as well, because that is a trade format, if you think about it.
But I don't. To me, a graphic novel is something designed for that format, for that, like the death of Captain Marvel when it came out in the 80s. Like the first appearance of the New Mutants that was a Marvel graphic novel. They, God Loves, Man Kills, Hookie. With Spider-Man, there were a bunch of comics, there were a bunch of graphic novels, during the 80s, that you know, Doctor Strange, Doctor Doom, and Greenberg the Vampire. There were all these stories that were designed to fit in that format. So I don't look at a graphic novel. I don't use graphic novel in trades as the same word.
So for you, they're two entirely different mediums.
For me, a trade is a collection or a reprinting of a book, of a collection.
Okay, because actually, a lot of people have been using those two terms interchangeably. And
yes,
you know what? I have been too. I've been using them interchangeably.
Yeah. And I don't. I mean, that's me. I don't. I won't disown you if you say that. I may have learned something.
Well, that's why, like, when I picked up the first graphic novel I actually picked up was JLA Earth 2 with Grant Morrison and Frank Twitely.
Right.
Yeah,
and
when
Frank
I picked
Wyden,
it up,
yes.
I'm like, why is this trade in a hardcover? I don't understand what's going on. Because, like, back then...
I have a soft cover version of that, but it's in the same format. It's in the same size as
okay,
a regular comic
Because
book.
Actually, the hardcover is actually a bit bigger than the normal comic. That one has... Okay. I guess maybe it's... Give it an extra, like, inch, I'd say. It's not too noticeable, but it certainly is bigger than the normal comic book. Same thing with Virtue and Vice. The hardcover is actually, I think, it's about, again, give it about another inch. But that's also just because of the format, because hardcovers usually are a bit bigger than soft covers. But I think that it's the sort of thing where had they decided to put JLA Virtue and Vice in individual issues, I would have felt cheated. Because that's... Had they made that, let's say, for example, a two-issue miniseries first, before making it into that hardcover format, it would have definitely lost something, because that was one story. It was not. It did not.
Right.
It really didn't need to be split up.
Which is why I can't stand a story that is designed to be written so that it's collectively
writing for the
trade.
Yeah.
Exactly. I can't. I mean, that to me is just, it's a shame. If you can tell the story in certain amount of issues, then tell it. Don't draw it out, you know. Don't have something happen for 3 pages just because you know those next 3 pages can make a decent story in the next issue, along with a dozen other so pages. And this way, that'll be collected as well. I don't just tell the story you want to tell. If it's a book, if it's a story that can be designed for a trade, then bring back the graphic.
Are there any
format.
Books that you were picking up that you stopped picking up monthly? Because it felt like they were writing for the trade, and you just decided either not to pick it up or ended up picking up the trade in the end?
For me, no, because I still see The Punisher by Garth Ennis is every story is a 6-issue arc, so that's pretty much designed for the trade. I still buy that on a monthly basis. Now, the kicker is I won't read those till
all
6
well,
are done.
Yeah, you've told me about that before. You like to finish until an arc is done, but... Yeah.
So, but I won't. I'll keep picking up Punisher. See, I don't. I'll buy trades for books that either someone says, "Oh, you should really be reading this." Like I'll like Wonder Woman when Greg Rucka started it. I have the first 2 trades of that, and I really like it. But I'm not. I'm just. When I grew up, comics were just a monthly thing. So I still have that mentality. It's not like it's more economical to buy them in a trade. But
conversely, don't you think that maybe if you write like monthly comics, you don't think that like maybe the story is getting damaged because they have to deliver a syllable
I felt that.
Monthly.
Yeah. That
I mean, it could work both ways.
Yeah.
You're making, I mean, your point is real valid, but it could work the other way, too.
And I'll give one example here that I've said many times before, House of M. For me, that is the perfect example of writing for the trade in the wrong way. Because there, you could slice two issues out of that. And again, people have disagreed with me with this, but this is my take on it. You could have very easily sliced out at least two issues of House of M that felt like nothing but filler because they wanted to have a trade here, and that's it. And to me, had they not been writing for the trade, those two issues would not have happened.
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, if our comic writers and creators can get out there and just construct their story and don't let page count be an issue, then that would be, some good stuff.
We got a post in the forums, and actually, again, I want to thank everybody out there for basically we put our this is the first time we actually put our topic up a couple days early, and we did actually get some really good responses here on the forums from some of the forum members. And this one comes from Nighthawk1138, and this is what his idea was. David posted, "Lord, do I despise the term floppies?" And his response was, "As do I. Pamphlet is another word that gets under my skin. Both are demeaning to those of us who do buy monthly comic books, as their use makes the traditional format just sound less important. Besides, no matter how the people who use those words try to talk their way out of it, rarely are the terms used in any manner but the pejorative. Comic book has sufficed for a couple of generations, and there really isn't any reason not to use it, especially since comic book or graphic novel are really the only phrases the general public understands. But if you use another term to differentiate from a trade, I like monthly, since it clearly informs without denigrating the form. Besides, all you trade lovers, if it weren't for those of us who buy monthly comics, there would be no way to subsidize the production of your beloved trades. You don't think DC or Marvel are going to pay advances, do you? Without monthly titles, there is no filler for the trade. As for the monthly versus trade debate in general, I think it is apparent which side I support. I have two reasons for choosing comic books. One, because the purchasing of monthly comics is what underwrites the work that ends up in trades. I think that stories should be written with monthlies, not trades, in mind. I won't go into detail about the common complaints, for instance, decompressed storytelling, lack of opening splash pages, loss of numbered pages, the lack of suspense because you know the rhythm of a four-part story. No, my greatest complaint about writing trade-centric stories is the requirement that each story be a self-contained unit. Writing arcs to meet that criteria has caused mainstream comics to lose the thing that helped elevate the view of the medium after Marvel hit it big, subplots. Number two, not every story deserves to be collected. Oh, I've been smacked around for having this opinion previously, but I will stand my ground. All comic stories are not created equally. Sturgeon's Law applies to all creative works. Why should mediocrity be rewarded with continuing residuals? I think trades should be a reward of sorts for creators, a way of making an incredible story permanent. Trading just the very best stories also decreases the glut of trades at your local Barnes & Noble and increases the chance of creating a new comic fan or rekindling the love of comics in a reader who had fallen away. Where's the impetus for creators to do the best work possible when they know going in that the story they create is going to be traded and the windfall of residuals assured? I gotta say, I love the language used in this post.
I know. I think that word was impetus, though.
Yeah,
I don't
impetus.
Know what that word
yeah,
means.
Yeah, there you go. Where's the impetus for creators? Yes, that's exactly what it was. And by the way, this is reading the New York Times for me, and that's what I love about this. And that's also what I love about forums, because you get so many different personalities and so many different forms of posting. Nighthawk, thank you for this post. It was incredibly intentional.
Yeah, so what he was saying was that he would rather the stories be designed for the monthly.
Exactly.
I mean, just.
And he's also saying that because a lot of creators nowadays are getting royalties as their work is getting reprinted in kept it for later. He's saying that, you know what, hey, this is a really good story. I think this deserves to be in a collected edition, so now you are going to get more money for doing the work, because this is a work
deserving. Exactly, and I mean, there are a lot of stories that are just traded for trade's sake, and, well, obviously, their numbers are going to be a lot lower than anything else. I mean, dear God, how many people do you really think picked up Identity Disc in trade? You know, I'm sure those numbers are nowhere near things like what Infinite Crisis will be once that's traded, because obviously, the best-selling book in DC deserves to be traded. Similarly, though, I would like to see books that maybe were not nearly as popular, like, for example, I'll say Manhunter or Thing, still get traded in one form or another. But if the numbers aren't there, it's hard to determine whether these things deserve a trade or not.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is that just what... falls under the criteria of what deserves to be traded is just the numbers and how much it's sold.
Rave reviews is actually, well, that's basically what I was saying there, because if it got good reviews but not good numbers, that might very well mean that it will turn out damn well in trades, but you got to wait until the trade actually comes out. Runaways, perfect example of that. Runaways Volume 1 got canceled, and the trades sold brilliantly, and they were given a second chance. And, well, that worked out really well for them. So, obviously, that second chance is warranted.
What's Renee putting in the blender back there?
I think she is vacuuming.
All right.
Oh. I thought she was making a smoothie.
Yes, that, yeah.
make sure that the dog stays out of the way, at least.
All right, I got to make sure. I got to wash her hands for the arsenic. the whole...
Oh, my God.
My concern with a collected edition is it was originally released in that monthly format, and I've seen DC trades do this. They might have done it in Hush, they might have done it in a couple. They even did it though during the prelude to Infinite Crisis, where they just cobbled a bunch of panels and text together. But I've seen DC edit a trade so that it fits in that format, so that it just kind of jives with the story. And meanwhile, there could be panels or pages that, well, this
that
was
I,
subplot,
that I really don't
this,
want to
this
say.
Wasn't necessary.
That really, I mean, because obviously, right. If it was there, it was there for a reason.
Exactly, and that's if I'm going to be missing something, yeah. That's going
and,
to bother.
And that
me
could actually that could affect future storylines, because if you're taking out something that you deem quote unquote unnecessary, what if that character that was introduced there on that particular panel later becomes a regular character? You know, if there was this one throwaway page where somebody says, "Oh, hey, Bill," and then all of a sudden she ends up going out with Bill later on, and you're wondering where the hell did this Bill guy come from?
Yeah.
You know? That's a problem.
Yeah, right? That's one of many scenarios that's just rotten with taking out a page.
I mean, it was also, I mean, obviously to fit in that, the name of the book was The Life and Death of Captain Marvel. So, I mean, it made more sense for those Captain Marvel issues, for that Iron Man issue to be edited that in that trade, because it just, you know, you didn't need that extra stuff, because it also isn't timely. It's a story that's over 20 years old. So, you know, that's fine. If I don't know that, you know, this girl Margaret just walked into a room and I'm never going to see her again, that's fine. It doesn't bother me. But if I'm buying a trade as they come out, like Batman with Under the Hood Volume 2, or the latest Spidey, or you know, the latest, since Marvel seems to put them out so quickly, I want to make sure that I'm getting exactly what they get in the comic in a collected edition. And what I was going to say before with the... since Braxton was saying, you know, who determines what should be collected? And Ian says The Thing or...
Manhunter.
What was the other title? Oh, Manhunter. You know, why not have Marvel or DC put an anthology trade of three or four issues of Manhunter with...
Vertigo did that a while back.
Three or four issues of... Exactly. You know, we'll put out a trade that'll have the first few issues of Straczynski's Fantastic Four, and we'll have the first couple issues of The Thing in there. And this way, you know, you can just kind of flip the book over, and you're okay, now you have a few issues of Thing. So instead of, this way it didn't get its own full-fledged trade, but hey, if you do like it, you know, let us know, and maybe we'll come out with the full-blown
Do you think the creators would be offended at all with their work sort of getting second fiddle to another trade, though? Like, let's say, for example, if Dan Slott – I know that Dan Slott isn't this type of person, but let's say, for example, if they did actually add on to the Fantastic Four – his work as sort of like an addition, like plus you get something, you know, what would Dan Slott think? Wouldn't he sort of be playing second fiddle to the Fantastic Four book?
For me personally, I would just be damn glad that my work is being published and people are going to be able to read it. I'm the type of person where if I'm not thinking ahead, okay, maybe I'm a poor businessman. Maybe maybe I wasn't brought up right, but if I'm there to do a job and I enjoy doing my job, then I'm going to do it. I'm not in it so that, oh, I'm going to get paid. Oh, this is it. This everything's going to come to me now. Cha-ching. I'm not thinking that. I want to, if I'm really happy with what I'm doing, if I'm doing my dream job, if I just want to do it, how many creators have you know, lost their shirts because they decided to self-publish a title that nobody bought?
We got another post here by Captain Canuck, who actually sent us an email a little while back and is one of our Canadian listeners. I'm definitely not a trades buyer, as there's nothing more fun for me than going to my local shop to pick up my books. Also, as I'm primarily a DC fan, waiting for the trade doesn't work, as DC's trade system is beyond horrible. In terms of the DCU, they only really trade the big books, such as Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, while other books like Aquaman, Firestorm, and Robin either get no trades at all or are traded at a much later date. And the stories are a half a year old. And actually, I agree with this, because how long did it take them to get Gotham Central out there? This is probably done by DC on purpose so as to get people to buy the monthlies. The problem being that it hurts them on a book such as Manhunter, which only has one trade, as we've mentioned already, where people find it difficult to get caught up with current books when the only way they can get up-to-date stories of a character is to find the back issues. If you get people hooked when they pick up a trade, this can lead them to pick up a monthly. Marvel is a much different story, as they seem to trade almost every book, and within at least a couple months of the story finishing. This obviously doesn't hurt their monthly sales that much, as they are usually the leader in market share.
I agree with that. If a trade's really knocking my socks off, I'm running out to pick up the monthly. I did that with Hellboy and BPRD.
Right.
Just because of Mignola. That's horrible. I didn't notice that with DC doing that with their trades, making them.
Yeah,
really
they've
far
been doing
like
that for a while. They're just not. I mean, Marvel, which just kind of hammers the point home for me that between the two, the ones that are really blatant about writing for the trade is Marvel. DC kind of tells their stories the way they want to tell their stories. I mean, how long ago did the first Under the Hood trade come
out? That's true. That was a while ago, actually.
And I think this past Wednesday they just released Volume 2. And that storyline's been going on. That storyline was going on during the Identity Crisis, right? I mean, way before Infinite Crisis. And they just came out with the second volume of that. Whereas, you know, as soon as Marvel finishes, you know, the latest six issues of X-Men. Oh,
and let's think about also the fact that they rushed, and I mean rushed, to get the Prelude to Infinite Crisis stuff out there. And I can understand why they did that, but those came out literally a month at, well, not even a month, like literally like a week after they were done. And with books that people might want to catch up on, especially with 1 year later, because you might want to know like what Aquaman was like before the current Busiek run, or you might want to know what Firestorm was like before 1 year later, and it's very hard to track these issues down.
Right. And especially since DC will go back to press and reprint a comic, you know, for the longest, I mean, Marvel just started doing it again, but for the longest, you know, when Joe Q first became EIC, he was not, you know, he was like, listen, you miss it, then you miss it. You wait for the trade. And they didn't reprint nothing, no matter how big of a story it was, no matter how much of it to do it, it you know, how much acclaim it received, it just, they said, you know, wait for the trade. Which probably also aided to the mentality of a lot of people that have that just, I won't read it now. Don't tell me anything about it for the next 6 months because I haven't read it yet.
Hey, that's what I'm doing with Identity Crisis. Not Identity Crisis.
Oh, really?
Infinite Crisis. I haven't
read
any of it.
How hard is it for you to listen to podcasts, man?
Oh my God, man!
I mean, I can imagine because I mean, like we had our spoiler centric episode. CGS had their spoiler centric episode. Raging Bullets had their spoiler centric episode. You got to like plug your ears and go la la la, not listening.
Man, I'm listening to podcasts and ducking and weaving. It's hard.
As soon as you hear the word "infinite" come out of people's mouths, like fast forward.
I'm diving for cover. Yeah,
that's why I'm hoping eventually everybody will start to use markers when they, you know, okay, this time we'll be talking about, and then we'll be. So at least this way people can, at least I'll know.
We might need to work on that, actually, now that I think about it. But we got one more post here on the forums, actually, and this one's from Matthew Guy, who's MGuy1977 on the forums. Comic timing. Ah, yes, using our name instead of hey, Ian and David. Yeah, hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
I prefer monthly issues of my favorite series, the Supes titles, mainly from the 1986 reboot to now and various DC titles that followed through the years, over trades as a monthly treat for myself, following the story arc and seeing month in and month out where the story leads. But I will concede the point that trades serve a vital role in comic buying for both the reader and the publisher. As many comics fans may have missed out on great titles of DC, Batman, Flash, and even Green Arrow as a kid, and it helps the publisher by hooking new readers into reading more titles on a larger scale. Trades and hardcovers gave my knowledge of the big crisis of the mid-80s and the universe all around the titles that I was interested in at the time, but was limited with an allowance as a kid when the special series came out the first time, and there were published monthlies that I could not get at the time. Monthlies and trades are equally important for the comics industry and the individual readers for both the short and long term to ensure its strong presence for generations to follow. Take care, Matthew Guy.
Couple more paragraphs, you'll have that sexy, raspy voice again.
Thank you very much. Sound like Val Venus. Hello, ladies. But no, I mean, he definitely does take a good point there, because even from, like, that's what I am, you know, with a lot of the 80s storylines that I missed out on because, you know, I was like four.
Two?
Okay. You know, like Inferno. I mean, Inferno was happening long before I was reading comics, and yet I went back and I got that trade, and it helped me actually, because now if they ever reference Inferno, but God forbid, since Marvel doesn't like continuity, but if they actually referenced Inferno, I would know what the hell they were talking about in Marvel Comics and X-Men Comics, because, well, all I knew was that this event happened and there was this, like, clone of Jean Grey and what the hell's going on. But now that I read it, it was a damn good thing. And I found out what happened to Ilyana and all that, and how she, you know, came back to being a kid again. And very interesting, but I wouldn't have ever known that because I'm not going to track down those individual issues of, like, five different books. You know, I'd rather pick up the trade.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the way things work sometimes. Now, we talked about taking away content. How about adding content? Because a lot of, yeah, to a trade.
To
a lot of trades do have the quote-unquote additional content.
Yeah, like, the behind the scenes.
Yeah, as long ago as, I'll even remember this, Reign of the Superman had a extra, I think, 5 pages in it that appeared in a later issue after Reign of Superman, that they actually tacked onto it, sort of like do a like epilogue closer type thing. And that, I mean, obviously those who didn't actually pick up the monthlies of Superman were, you know, were happy to see this end. But even today, there's some added pages every now and then that you might not have gotten elsewhere, or behind the scenes looks.
Well, I think that's fair, since the monthlies are going to have their own little jewels, like the letters columns in the back and, you know, stuff like that.
Not from DC nowadays.
Yeah, DC has pulled their letters pages. They do this, it reminds me a lot of Cup of Joe that they do in Marvel, only it's replaced their letters pages as opposed to just an extra thing instead of an ad.
Yeah, there's like some I never read it. It's like it's signed off by the mole at 1600, who's the, you know, just telling you about some behind the scenes stuff going on with their characters. And
well, I never read the letters anyway. Which, I mean, when I'm done with the story, I put the book
down.
I'm
a letters reader.
Just me.
Reader, so that's a tongue twister. But no, I mean, and that's I would have loved to see. And again, this is something that a lot of different podcasts have talked about. But I would love to see the letters pages included in some of those old books, because a lot of creators got their starts there.
Yeah,
they were fans too.
Well, they have done that in some trades, haven't they?
I think the
like Omnibus,
the X-Men. Omnibus,
yeah.
The Fantastic Four one, and I think the X-Men one. And I do like, but I, when I flip through my old comic books, I like looking at the ads because they weren't as ugly and as obtrusive as they are nowadays, like that Civic 2-page ad on page 2 and 3. I remember, you know, just flipping the net. Actually, DC used to have at the bottom of their pages, if there was an ad on the next page, it would say story continued following second page, or story or third page following. And it would, if they had a double page ad. And I remember the Gotta Get a Grit and the Sea Monkeys and the TSR Dungeons and Dragons ads.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed flipping through my older comics going, oh, wow, this movie came out when this comic was being published. I mean, it's
looking
great.
At some of my old comics and seeing like ads for the first Mortal Kombat for the Super Nintendo. I'm like, wow.
Or even House ads. Like right now, I'm flipping through a Flash, giant size Flash from May number 196. I do not know. Let's see if I can find out what year it is. The Flash, April May 1970. I'm flipping through a couple of pages, and here's an in-house ad with a Detective Comics presents Batman and Robin. It's a 15-cent comic. You got Action Comics on the next page, and you know, knowing that these comics were also out at the same time just makes it that much more fun to me flipping through all
the comics. Without a doubt, and that's part of the fun of it, you know. And it's sort of taken away a bit from the trades because, well, you reminisce over what those years were like. Even if I pick up some back issues randomly, you know, if it's from the 90s, I'm going to remember, oh my god, I remember when that wrestling game came out, or oh my god, I remember when they came out with that, you know, Incredible Hulk TV movie, you know, or something like that. And it's really like I have flashbacks. I'm like, I'm sitting there like, I remember where I was when this happened. And you know, that's something you miss out on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what about the omnibus? Absolutely. I mean, we did mention the omnibus. I mean, obviously, that's adding something that you would never get in a monthly. The oversized packaging, you know, the crisper art, as it were, the extra touches they add in there, and stuff like Alias. The Alias omnibus is something I'd love to have in my collection someday once I actually, I don't know, have money. But, because just seeing that gorgeous Michael Gatos art, like, huge, it's just mind-blowing to me. I need to get that eventually.
Right. I think I might like it, too, but I, you know, it's on the list somewhere down the line. But you're right. I mean, it's nice. It's larger. But I'm also of the school of thought that I didn't buy Alias as a monthly, but if I bought the monthly issues, then why am I? I'm almost being penalized because you're coming out with better for someone that's buying the trade.
Yep.
You know, they're getting more for a lot less money than I spend every month. And it's like when they come out with a book, a novel, and it's in a hardback, and I went and I got a first edition hardback, but then when it comes out on paperback, it's like, oh, here's an extra 30 pages or an interview with the author. And what about me?
That they're coming out with that I believe was just announced. I mean, that's going to have so many things that were not in, you know, the trade paperback of Watchmen that I have sitting on my shelf. And I'm thinking to myself, I'd love to hear this, but how about...
But I don't know if I would, though, for Watchmen, because I think that might just take something away from me. I mean, just knowing the way I read it when it first came out, and I did read it when it was first collected in a trade. But I mean, to find out, you know, what Alan Moore was really thinking, I'd rather leave some things up to my imagination. I don't need to know that Alan Moore was also going to – Alan Moore knew this character's shoe size because he was going to do something. Let the story stand
on its own
for me.
So there's only certain ones you'd like to see omnibus. Okay, what's that?
X-Men.
Yeah.
Claremont. Yeah, that.
Oh, could you imagine the Dark Phoenix saga, omnibus? That would be just amazing.
Actually, I can't wait for if they ever decide to do the Paul Smith run on X-Men as an absolute.
That would be great. I mean, Paul Smith art any shape or size is going to look amazing, especially blown up because.
Right.
Well, that's another thing too, though, because these are older art. I mean, if you're going back in time and you're getting these, you know, larger sized things, and they were made for a smaller size,
it's not going to look as good.
Right. Yeah.
Unless they add some digital touches to it, which they often do, but it loses something.
Right.
You know, if you don't get that original like you know dotting and all that, you know, on the earlier issues, it just it really loses something in the translation.
Well, I was thumbing through the Fall of the Mutants trade, and I don't know. The art on it, it just seemed like it was dulled down or something, but I don't think it's changed in size or anything. It's just, I don't know, art today is a little bit different than it used to be.
Yeah.
Well, even V for Vendetta. I mean, I gotta say, the V for Vendetta that I picked up, the trade that I have, the colors are incredibly, incredibly washed out. And I know that it wasn't originally very vibrant in the first place, but it looks even more washed out here. I don't know whether it's the paper they use or whether it just got lost in translation, but I'm like straining my eyes to read it.
Yeah. Yeah, mine was the same way. It's like it fell into the toilet or something. My wife may have done that.
Whoa, you know, now. Yeah. I don't think she did it to mine, so then.
No, I don't think she did.
Honestly, if you're going to put out a trade, make sure the quality is as good as it can be. You know, and that's really it. Before we wrap things up, I'm curious, do you have a favorite trade off the top of your head?
For me, well, I said Mignola.
Hellboy.
Yeah, all of Hellboy, I think, would be just the whole run. Oh,
yeah.
The writer. He's just a guy. Oh, he's king. He's king of the writers.
For me, it's Kingdom Come.
Damn it. Can I go back?
Now, I would never say that because I have the original four issues right here. So I wouldn't. I haven't read that in a trade. I do have, which I want to go back and reread one of these days. I have the first Astro City trade, Life in the Big City.
Oh, my God.
Can I go back again?
But I really think my favorite is, even though I'm going to cheat because it's two parts, I really did, really, really did like DC The New Frontier, volumes.
Yeah.
I'm going to get those action figures as they release them in whichever wave, whoever's in any wave, I'm going to get. Renee doesn't like the look of them, but I think...
No, the look was a sell to me, too, but you get going in that story, he really captured a time, you know?
Yeah, it really is, and I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the first shot, Last Call of 100 Bullets, the first volume of that. I mean, there are some trades that I do have. I have the first couple of Preachers, just so I can get into the story, but the Astro City trade I really like, and the DC The New Frontier I think would be
all right.
On top.
For me, I mean, like I just said, Kingdom Come is up there, top 10. Again, they're two trades, but top ten together as trades. Most Alan Moore stuff for me feels like it works better as a trade than it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because you get that full story and top ten. Oh yeah,
the League.
Definitely the League.
Yeah, I was just gonna say right.
Both
yeah.
of those.
I have volume one of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and I'll definitely agree with that. But I mean, just top ten. Yeah.
But there are a couple of writers, because there's also Rick Veitch, who did Brack Pack and Maximortal, and even though those were monthly issues, that just it had much more of an effect when it was collected. Reading that trade just brought the story.
How about Daredevil
Born
Again?
I read those as they were coming out monthly. I can see the attraction to sitting down and reading that all in one, because I can understand everybody's attraction to the Loeb Sale Batman with the Long Halloween and Dark Victory, and I have those individual issues waiting to be read because I want them on eBay, but I didn't. I would love to see that. I would love to have that collected on a trade, because I just think that would look really snazzy on a bookshelf.
And all I have to say, eBay, a comic book collector's friend. Oh,
yes, it is. But to go along with Born Again, I do have the Smith Quesada Palmiotti run of Guardian Devil in trade, and that is nice. That is nice reading, because I mean Smith is a wordy bastard, and for you to be able to to read that on a month to month basis, I feel bad for anybody that had to do that, and getting that in a collected
edition
was really
nice. Can't wait for
Clerks
2. That's all I have to say about that. Oh yeah,
okay.
Without a doubt. All right, so I think we've come to the conclusion that both have their own appeal, but for certain stories, one's better than the other, and for other stories, one's better than the other.
And I'd be really curious to see if anybody despises one over the other. Like, oh, God, I would never buy trades, or, oh, I've never bought a monthly again.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that they both have, like you said. So
I think most people are going to fall where you and I fall, David. I mean, you sit on the monthly side. I kind of sit on the trade side. But we both have to Can I call
myself the middleman?
Yeah.
I guess
when the time comes, sure.
Yeah. Oh man, well, yeah. When the time comes for you two to duke it out over which one's better, I'll be the referee. Oh,
no, man. Never.
Yes,
never hit
Dave. Yes, he has a podcasting face.
Yes, that's
right. I do have a voice.
You're damn right, man.
Radio.
So do I. So, and anybody who does want to comment on this particular episode, just because you commented before, doesn't mean you can't comment now that it's actually out, and you can do so over at our forums, which are provided happily by the Comic Geek Speak guys, and we got to thank them once again for giving us a space. Also, next episode, we'll keep you updated on that. Things are a bit up in the air as of now, because I'm going to be out of town one more weekend for Anime Next, and anybody who is going there, make sure to, if you see me, say, "Hi, Ian, how are you?" I'll say, "Fine, who are you?" And you'll introduce yourself, and we'll have a good time. But, yeah, that's over at AnimeNext.org, by the way, if you're interested. And also, I know for certain I will be at Baltimore Comic Con this year, as I just booked myself my hotel. And I'm actually saying this out here for everybody to hear. If anybody needs a room, let me know, because it would be very nice to at least have somebody pay for part of the room. So there you go. I just need to get that out of there. So anybody who is looking for a space, I got a room that's on the light rail for Baltimore. It's only a couple of stops away. And I'm also planning on going to a Baltimore Yankee game at one point, as they are in town that week. So anybody who's interested in joining me with that, too, just send me a line over at comictiming@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to respond. So there you go with that. And one more thing before we get going here. We're going to have a contest coming soon. We're working out the details, but we are – basically, Wally is gracious enough to be giving us some mini X-Men 3 posters that he got a hold of. So once we actually figure out the details with that, it's coming soon. We'll probably have it announced by next episode, but we're working on a contest, cool. And we'll have more on that later on. And, you know, before I forget – the guys at Around Comics over at AroundComics.com wanted to remind everybody out there, buy Mouse Guard. It is a series that is being produced. It has sort of low numbers right now, and that's why they want to get the word out there. So any listeners to Comic Timing that have not read Mouse Guard yet, I highly recommend picking it up. I myself am going to try and track down all of the issues that have come out. I know it's very hard to find number one. But if you can find anything else, go on eBay, track this freaking thing down, because it looks like a lot of fun. And, yeah, just
sure
a description
does.
Here, okay? In Mouse Guard, mice struggle to live safely and prosper among all of the world's harsh conditions and predators. Thus, the Mouse Guard was formed. They are not simply soldiers that fight off intruders. Rather, they are guides for common mice looking to journey without confrontation from one hidden mouse village to another. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's a cool story.
How often do you find mice
there?
In comic books? Unless it's like
not
Mickey Mouse,
often.
But that's, yeah. The mice are Saxon, Kenzie, and Liam, and that's what's going here. A whole bunch of great reviews over here. If you go to www.archaiasp.com/mouseguardpreview.html, you'll be able to find it, and there's underscores in between Mouse Guard and Preview. You'll be able to find a whole bunch of reviews, and they've got some preview pages of 1 and 2 on there, so if you're not picking Mouse Guard up, I highly recommend it. And also, again, thank you to the Round Comics guys for reminding us to mention this, because it's something that's definitely worth picking up. Meanwhile, Braxton, it's been an honor, my friend.
Anything thank you.
You'd
thanks
like
for
to,
having me.
Promote or brag about?
No, I don't think I'm selling
really?
Anything.
Okay.
No,
not at this time. Oh, wait. My line of potato chips. Cheesy Braxton.
Yes.
There we go.
Cheesy Braxton.
Please.
Now, what flavor is that? Cheesy? They're strangely, dangerously cheesy. That's what I'm talking about. David, as always, it is a pleasure.
All right. Yes, sir. Thank you.
And once again, you can vote for us over at Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page over at speakeekspeak.com/comictiming. Once again, our email address is comictiming@gmail.com. If you want to send us any questions, comments, audio comments, or nasty flames, please do so over there. Ah, you suck. And anybody who wants to send us iTunes reviews, just head on over to iTunes, log on in, and give us a review so we can know what you think of the show. And of course, before I forget, we are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network, and you can find that over at comicspodcasts.com. That's comicspodcasts, comicspodcastnetwork.com, and you can find it over there. And other than that, there's always time for comics.
Absolutely. I don't drink soda. I'll sometimes drink iced tea from the cafeteria. Okay. But for the most part, it's either water, or if somebody at work's made a fresh pot, then I'll have a cup or two from that. But
if I don't have coffee by 10 a.m., I begin to mutate.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
and my head starts to swell. My eyes hurt. No, it's horrible.
Do you get blue fur and suddenly start transforming into, you know, like this beast-like thing?
Yeah.
And it's horrible.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Talks big words.
Oh, my stars and goddess. And thanks again, guys, for having me.
Dude, not a problem, dude.
It's our pleasure. You've got the personality for it, so hell, we're for it. And you give us that southern twang.
Right.
Yee-hootie.
Yeah, we might have to publish the Braxton English Dictionary after the show.